Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahl-Ketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is April the 9th, 2015. And so today we're going to be talking about mental toughness strategies and how to coach your athletes with those, and, yeah, invite your ideas, too, about how to get your athletes through tough challenges, sort of continue our conversation from last time, where we talked about this area as well, mental toughness, and, you know, just assessing and reading your athletes, knowing the physical and mental signs. We'll talk about, you know, coaching mental toughness. It's literally like a muscle that needs exercise, and about you know, warning signals that you're an athlete might be in trouble, and then just knowing the difference between toughing it out. When is it good to tough it out? When is it good to just call it to not finish, or do some athletes quit too early? Those kinds of things. And then there's, you know, when athletes are having a difficult time, you know, different strategies to deal with that, with the pain of effort, with mental pain, physical pain, and all those inner battles that are going on. So. Welcome, Michelle, too. And if you have any questions, that's the main reason for these calls, too, is to answer your questions. So feel free to ask away, and I'll always answer your questions live on the call, or if you can't be with us, send an email. I'll answer them on the call that way, too. So these calls, of course, are every second and fourth Thursday of the month, so this is April 9th, and the next one would be April 23rd, and then the next one after that, May 14th and May 28th, if you want to mark your calendar for those. And then to access the replays, you can always just go to the Performing Edge Coach website, the private members area that you all have access to as part of this program, and then you can just click on the yellow tab that says schedule and click that, and then scroll down, and there's all the recordings are there. So, did someone else just join us? I just heard a beep. I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyway, Michelle, did you have a question or anything to report?
Oh, hi, Dr. Joanne. I actually do have a question.
Okay. And you also, can you mention just what you just said? Did you feel like you were getting more clients coming in?
Yes,
and I just wondered what
I'm,
the source is for that, or how they're coming into you so others can learn too?
Well, I'm shameless about just telling people what I do.
Uh-huh, great.
And, I'm out surfing, and I see a coach working with an athlete, or I'm on the chairlift, and I'm talking to a triathlete, and I bring up the topic of sports psychology, and 100% of the time people are interested and open-minded to it, I've noticed. And then I'll just tell them my website, and I believe in it so strongly that it's really easy to have those conversations. Like, I don't mind self-promoting in that way at all. And then I've been writing a lot of articles and just got published last week in a national publication here in Canada. And it's
great.
Got a link to my website and so on. And I get sort of, you know, a couple calls a week on those sorts of things as well. So those have been really good.
Yeah, that's great. Fantastic. What was the article? Where was it published, did you say? Congratulations.
Impact Magazine.
Impact Magazine, okay.
Yeah.
Is it online?
Yeah, it's a paper, and, you know, you get it in all the sports stores and so on. It's a free publication.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
They produce it quarterly. And I just sent him in an article, and he said, great, love it, we're going to use it. So,
great. So since you got an article in there, it'd probably be easy to get another one the next quarter, too.
Yeah, exactly.
You just follow up with them on that since you're in the door already.
Yeah. And then I've been calling, friends and offering to coach their kids for free. Just at the beginning, and then I've been getting some referrals from that, and now I'm feeling more confident in what I'm doing, so I'm approaching like the High Performance Tennis Academy that's here in Vancouver, and I've now got a tennis player that I'm working with, so I feel like I'm sort of building my credibility, and I know the talk and so on. So, yeah, it's good. It's gaining momentum for sure. The talk, like the whole tennis, lingo and talk and vernacular.
Uh-huh.
And so you just need a couple of tennis players in that you're coaching, and then I feel like I can go into a tennis academy and just feel like I'm ready for it.
Yeah, that's great. If you can focus, for a period of time on one sport, like you say, get to know the tennis lingo and the people there, and get in at one tennis academy, you can say. Then it's easy to go somewhere else, to another tennis club and say, hey, I'm getting, I'm working at this other one, and they're having really good results. I'd like to be able to help you. Yeah, you can you sort of have that on it, build your resume, build your profile there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you can get
it. I think it's a really hot topic, too, in Vancouver these days, sports psychology. It seems like I can't believe how incredibly open to it these teenagers are.
Great. Wow.
Yeah.
That's good. Can you give an example of how you give how you start a conversation or let's say you're either surfing or triathlete or doing something, just a casual conversation with someone?
Yeah, well, I was in the surf not too long ago, and there was a coach working with an athlete, and I just commented on what a great coach I thought he was, and he really got that athlete to do what he was, attempting to achieve, and I was commending him on what he was doing, and then we just, it kind of opened the door, and I was authentic. I mean, I wasn't just feeding him one. I was seeing the results he was getting, and then I said, do you guys do any mental training in your program? And he said, no, but I'm really keen on it and interested. And I said, well, can I give you, my website? You could check it out. He said, that'd be fantastic. So,
yeah. That's great, yeah.
And just being able to do it distally is wonderful, too, because a lot of the surfers, they live in the States or they live over, in Indonesia. I'm working with one, and you can do it all on Skype or FaceTime or even Facebook, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you can actually have conversations now on Facebook.
Yeah,
you know that?
You mean the private messaging?
No, like you're actually as though you're talking on a phone.
Oh, yeah, like with FaceTime? Or is that...
Yep. But Facebook as well, you can talk as though you're having a conversation on a telephone, but it's through the computer. Because I've noticed that a lot of teenagers... they don't have Skype.
Okay, yeah, right. They might. It's for us older folks.
It's for older folks, yeah.
Yeah, we're more familiar with that, a different generation.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So, and that's free,
right? If I meet the teenager in Vancouver for the first time, we meet face-to-face, and then after that, we talk on FaceTime. So they're... Actually, I asked them what they prefer, if they'd like to come into the office or they prefer to just do it from their home. And most of them want to do it from their house. I think they feel they can open up a little bit more. It doesn't feel as clinical, in an office setting.
Uh-huh.
So I've noticed a really positive reaction from them with that.
So you go to their home?
No, I will be in my office and they'll be at their house and we'll just talk on FaceTime. And
okay.
Have our meetings that way.
Yeah, great.
So we're not sitting face-to-face in an office space. Like, I find they're just a bit more relaxed when they're in their own home and own setting.
Right, yeah. So that's great, yeah. So it's just, you get good video. You do it with video or just audio with FaceTime? Or do you do it on Facebook?
Video.
Yeah, the video. Yeah, that way they can see you. It's more personal.
Yeah,
you can do either, I think, depending on some places. If you don't have good reception or internet connection, you can choose to just do audio. But, video is great. And also another option is, of course, Google Hangouts, is a way to do video conferencing that's free also. So that's great. And you can then just make it private with Google Hangouts. After the call, you can just say it's you don't record it, of course, and just say it's private, to not publish it anywhere. So that's fantastic. Yeah, so great work, Michelle, with getting that. Yeah, being authentic, like you say, and talking about just noticing what other people are doing, like a coach that's working with an athlete. That's a fantastic way to just be, you know, open up a conversation. And you're not, that way you're not competing with them. They're doing their work, but you're, kind of offering a different perspective that you could complement what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so that's great. So it's like you're out there able to do what you're doing. You're surfing and doing what you do anyway, and then just being able to just be, like you said, it's marketing, but it's in the context of what you're doing already, and it just sounds really natural. Yeah, that same kind of
thing. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I wanted you to share that so other people know, the kinds of things, ways that you're marketing, kind of like marketing on the fly, right?
Yeah.
And while you're naturally just chatting and doing what you do. I do the same thing with running, and I'll have books in the back of my car or something, and somebody's chatting about, I tell them what I do is sports psychology, and they say, wow, that's really interesting, and then I'll show my book there, and sometimes they want to buy it or from me or find out more, and then it just kind of goes into a natural conversation. So, anyway, I'm sorry, I got off a little bit. You mentioned that you had a question. So what's your...
do have a question.
Go ahead.
So, sorry?
Well, it's a little bit hard to hear.
Can you hear me, Dr. Joanne?
Yeah, it's fine. Just for a moment, it cut out just a second, but now you're fine.
Sorry, the mic goes away from my face when I move.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good. Thanks.
So my question is, I have a tennis player.
A tennis player?
And I want to get started, with station with next week. And I produced its previous call with him. We were talking about it. He has a really hard time. He's very logical, and he's really left brain. You could just pick up on it when you're talking to him.
Uh-huh.
He has a very hard time envisioning his own, he wants to work on his backhand. He can't seem to make a picture in his mind and create, self doing it right or create a powerful, positive image.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering, do you have any tricks to help?
Yeah. Are you still there? We're cutting in and out a little bit.
Oh, I'm here.
Okay. So let me just repeat the question so everyone could hear for the recording. Michelle, you're saying you've got a tennis player that has a hard time envisioning his backhand. He's really left brain and can't create a powerful, positive image of that. So you're just wondering about techniques for that. And it's good to, I think, at first just to acknowledge that some people are more right brain, some people are more left brain, and we all use both sides of the brain. It's just that sometimes we, some people are more analytical, and so that's normal and natural. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong at all. But we just, it's kind of like a muscle. We just need to... you can explain to him that the vision, being able to image is like a muscle that we have to work out and develop, And so one way to do that is just to, you know, use something simple first if you're with him. Let's say out on the tennis court, you know, just have him look at his racket and then close his eyes, just a stationary racket just right there, and then have him close his eyes and then imagine the racket in front of him and just see if he can see a picture of his racket, you know, something real simple like that. And he could probably do that fairly simply. If he can't do that, then another way is just to watch a video, have him watch a video of some sort of you know, say some tennis players, and then close your eyes and sort of replay that video in his mind. If he sometimes, if you watch somebody else playing a video of somebody else playing, then he can, and then close his eyes and go back. Maybe just watch one slow motion shot or something, and you know, just go on YouTube and type in, you know, tennis playing or a specific you know, match that he knows about, and have him you know, watch that tennis player, then go back and replay it in his mind. Then that's another way to you know, replay something that's not quite as personal. So you could do that, and then maybe colors is another thing. You could just imagine something that is, you know, really a really vivid color, like red. If he has, let's say he has a red shirt on, look at the red shirt and then close his eyes and see if he can see that color red, and then be able to change it, say change the color in his mind to blue. Imagine, you know, say, okay, now you've got a blue, ask him, do you have a blue shirt at home? Now imagine the blue shirt and see if you can change that color in your mind. So you're sort of working with colors there. You could do the same thing with numbers. You know, imagine the, let's say, do you have a shirt with a number on it, you know, number 12 or something. Imagine that number 12. And, you know, I mean, it sounds fairly simple, but it's just a way to demonstrate that that's all that he might be thinking, that it's real complex, you know, having to imagine something. And he might be, like, tightening up in his mind or putting some sort of blocks there, where if you give him something real simple to do, then it's he could realize that, oh, this is, everybody could do this, yeah. Or, you know, just an object. Imagine, say, what kind of car do you have and what color is that? And, okay, now just close your eyes and imagine your car right now. And then you could do movement, you know, say to him, okay, so see your car and imagine yourself driving in the car. Maybe something non-tennis related at first, and say, you're driving the car and it's, you know, you're getting out of your parking, out of your garage or your parking spot. And ask him where he drives to. Maybe he drives to the store, to the grocery store. So imagine you're driving down the street to the store, and you're looking, and, you know, kind of, so you're getting a simple little thing that he, you know, an action that he does every day. That's non-tennis related at first, and just something simple like that, driving a car, or you know. Imagine, you know, then you could do something with sound, with audio. So imagine the phone ringing, you know, the sound on your phone, you know, ask him what the ringtone is on his cell phone. Everybody has different ringtones, and ask him what he's hearing, and replay that. And a lot of people think visualization is only seeing something, but of course, you know, we know that it includes all five senses. So if you go through some of the different senses like that, and say, you know, it includes hearing. So, you know, hear the phone ringing. That's using your auditory sense. And imagine it's like a friend, you know, your best friend calling. And hear the friend's voice. That's another sound kind of thing. And then hear yourself saying, what do you usually say when you, you know, answer the phone? And maybe he says, hi, and or hey, how's it going? So imagine yourself saying, you know, hey, what's up, or whatever whatever they say in Canada, and you know, just doing that sound or that conversation. So that's so now we've got like visual, and we've got different kind of stationary visual, and then movement, action of visual, and then sounds, and then you could also do kinesthetic. So have them practice that with something kinesthetic, like put your hand in warm water or something. You know, let's say imagine you're washing your hands in the sink and you hear the sound of the water, you're turning on the water, and then you put your hands under the faucet and maybe washing your face and feel the water on your face. So those are all kind of kinesthetic things. And does that kind of make sense, Michelle? You might be muted.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. Yep, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay. And then once, you know, because he might be kind of blocking the because he's probably, you know, most people in tennis are really competitive, he might be sort of blocking that out or thinking, oh, I can't really visualize that. But if you take something non-tennis oriented, yeah, and then go through the different, the five senses and practice with something, with each sense, with smell, you could do, you know, say imagine you're making dinner and your favorite thing, ask him what your favorite meal is, or, I don't know, hamburgers or whatever it is. Imagine cooking a hamburger and smelling the smell of a hamburger. Or, you know, as it's getting to spring here, imagine a grill or something, a barbecue, and the smell of the barbecue, you know, something really good smelling and pleasant. Then he could get into that experience. Yeah. And then once he's been able to do that, okay, then say, okay, now let's do something simple with tennis. You know, just imagine the what's your favorite place that you like to play, or your favorite court, or just imagine the court itself. You know, close your eyes, and then he could be actually talking to you while he's while he's imagining it. Saying, okay, you're closing your eyes, you're imagining your favorite court, now where are you now, and describe the setting, and what does it look like, what does it sound like, and what does it feel like there, is that, and then, you know, gradually work towards maybe, like you said, envisioning his backhand is the difficult part, so maybe start with the forehand, or start with a serve, or something, and just imagine just bouncing the ball. You know, start with that, where he's not doesn't have to do a lot of things at once. Just bouncing the ball and feel the ball coming back to his hand, and you can see the ball. What color is it? Ask him, and then the sound of the ball, you know, bouncing, and how does that all feel? So do the ball, and then bring in the racket. You know, doing a serve and feel, you know, and kind of maybe do it in slow motion. That's another thing you can do to kind of to accentuate the feelings and the imaging is slow it down. So imagine that you're doing it in slow motion like we always see on TV. I'm sure you've seen, you know, now we've got the super slow motion video that when they do the replay. So they can see it slowing down and taking, and being able to throw the ball in the air and then connect, feel your racket, you know, taking your backswing and then feeling the ball connecting, or the racket connecting with the ball, and then see where it goes, see it going in the, in the right spot where he wants, in the square. So all that kind of take them through step by step real slowly, and then have them kind of, with each of those things, you want to have the client talk to you afterward, give you feedback and say, now, how did that go? And were you able to imagine that okay? And if a client is not able to imagine it, then go back and say, okay, let's try it again, or let's try a different color or a different sound or, you know, try different things. So you experiment. And if also if somebody's having trouble with visioning, imagine something really, you know, something that they really remember. You know, ask them about a memory or something, maybe at the beach or a vacation, something pleasant, and ask them to describe that vacation. Where did you go, and who were you with, and what was it like there? And maybe they were at an ocean, and then describe what was the color of the water and all of that. So memories really bring out a lot of good. You see, people can imagine a really nice place that they were if it's you know, something really pleasant. So have them do that, and then so you could go to kind of a non-tennis related thing, and then go back to and then once they get that right, are able to master that kind of visualization, then go back to tennis and do something simple. And then maybe do the forehand, envisioning that, and then work toward slowly the backhand, and maybe with the backhand just imagine one part of it, you know, the bat swinging backwards, seeing a ball coming at them. Just taking it real slow like that so that they see each step. Does that kind of make sense, Michelle? You might be muted there, and that's okay.
Hi, I'm. Yes, it is muted.
Oh,
yes, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, it's just I think that kind of relates to our topic here of you know, mental toughness and being able to imagine something, because most of the time we're, you know, athletes are imagining something that is a mistake or something, a problem area. We you know, they see that over and over in their minds. Or you want to be have your you know, switch that over to a new movie in your mind. So great. So I wanted to thanks, Michelle, for reporting in on what your great progress with getting new clients and getting and a great way to do that in a natural way. And congratulations on your article in that Impact magazine and for yeah, your question about visualization. I think that applies to everyone here on how to visualize. So I just wanted to now talk about some of the mental toughness techniques and how you can get your athletes, you know, work with your athletes to be able to handle tough situations. And one of the things that, you know, I've done a lot of extensive work with athletes over the years and developed different traits that kind of define that mental toughness. And I think the good news is that it's even top athletes, they don't, you know, we think that they have these super abilities, but really it's just a matter of, you know, that perhaps they started early or they were in the right place at the right time. And so these qualifications and traits and things that, techniques are really something that anybody can develop. That wants to do well in a sport. So one thing that I've noticed when athletes are having a tough time or want to develop a mental toughness, they need to have a sense of an internal self-direction and motivation. You know, it needs to come from within themselves. So if an athlete, let's say, is having a tough challenge, you want to ask them who they're doing it for. So that's a good assessment technique that you can use, is ask them, that, you know, you want to say the goals must come from some that you've chosen. And with kids, often I work with a lot of high school kids, college kids, and even younger kids. I'm working with a 10-year-old basketball player right now. And I can see, I have often, if you're working with kids, it's good to see the kid, the child and the parents there together in your office or in your home at first together so that you can see the dynamics between the two of them. And I've noticed that, like with this 10-year-old basketball boy, that his parents are highly driven and have really high standards for him. And so you can see that a lot of the drive comes from the parents. Sometimes too much of the pressure comes from parents to do well. So you want to ask the child, you know, who are you doing it for? I mean, initially kids want to please their parents, and so there's that going on as well. But over time, you want the client to be able to have that direction and drive that needs to come from within, not from parents or from coaches or from, you know, the medals or rewards that they may get on the outside. Those are all good, but ask them to develop some sort of internal motivation and direction, and say ask them, what is it that drives you inside? So that's a really good question to ask your athletes. What drives you? What motivates you? And what you know? What keeps you going when you're not, say, doing so well out there? Ask them what is it that you like about your sport. So ask them what is it that they want too. They're asking them about their goals and their some kids want, you know, from a very early age want to go to the Olympics or want to become a professional athlete. So I think it's good to ask them about that, and sometimes they've never really voiced that before. So be able to have them talk about their goals, their aspirations, and that can really get them into a place where they can know the reasons why, you know, kind of list the reasons why they are doing their sport, and get them back in touch with that so that they can understand the internal motivation and self-direction there. So that's one area to look at. And then another one is, I think, you know, a person's desire, kind of internal desire and love for their sport. And I think the top athletes and really successful athletes that I've worked with, I noticed they have this real fire inside and kind of internal hunger that fuels their passion to achieve that important goal. You know, this is regardless of their sport or their ability or their talent level. And so I think to be really good at something, you need to be able to have that vision or dream of some sort. So what you want to do, you know, I tell people, wherever you place your attention, your energy will follow. And so you want to help them develop that picture in their mind. So say, you know, one technique you could do with an athlete is just ask them to, you know, draw me a picture of what that would look like when you are doing well in your sport, you know, now and then in the future. So ask them, say, your ideal game or your ideal outcome for this season. Ask them to draw you a picture of that. So that allows them to dream a bit and to, you know, develop their vision of what it is that they want. And kids can do this at any age. You know, even young kids like this 10-year-old basketball player I'm working with, I found that they can, kids are imagining all the time, and the younger they are, the better, actually, in terms of ability to imagine something. And so if you can have them just imagine what would it be like to be, like if a kid says, I want to be a pro basketball player in the NBA be able to be at, do their best, what would that look like? And, you know, at first not placing any limits on them. Later on they can, of course, look at priorities and look at what would it take to get there and what are the roadblocks or the possible obstacles and that kind of thing. But at first you want to have someone just imagine and dream. And then also ask your athlete, let's go back to when you were first attracted to your sport, and say, what attracted you to your sport initially, because a lot of athletes are maybe they're feeling burnt out, or they're in a slump, or they're feeling a lot of pressure from parents, or with top athletes they're have pressure with you know, performances from their pressure from their sponsors or their agents or coaches. So you want to kind of put that aside for a moment and have them go back to when they first started their sport and say, ask them what attracted you to your sport initially, and, you know, what was fun about it, so that you get that fun factor back in there. And talk about the, you know, maybe like with a basketball player, oh, he liked the feeling of the, you know, the fast movement on the court. And maybe with tennis, it could be, you know, just that feeling of you know, power and hitting the racket, hitting the ball really hard with the racket, and being able to just, you know, get it right in there. You know, just right on the corner of the court accurately. Or it might be the competition aspect, so really going head-to-head with another tennis player. But with surfing, you know, it might be a thing of, like Michelle, we were talking about surfing, that you do that, there might be just the feeling, you know, it's very creative and it's wonderful. I just talked to another girl yesterday about, she does running, but she also does a lot of body surfing and boogie boarding, and just for fun. And we talked about the power of the waves, and how it's very majestic, and that feeling of floating and lifting, feeling lifted up, and feeling like you're moving. You know, just being being moved forward, the energy of the wave, and just that surge. You know, that adrenaline rush is fantastic. So get them in touch with that, and have them tell you all the words and the phrases that they can think of, and then be writing those down. And this can be another way to do an MP3 or a visualization for them, a recording. If you can write down their words, how they understand it, how they experience it, then you can write create an audio for them based on. It doesn't have to be a peak performance per se, you know, when they were competing really well, but maybe it's just a time when they first started doing their sport and it was just totally fun. So think of that time, so that someone can, you know, fall in love with their sport again and feel like, you know, that true internal sense of enjoyment and desire and enthusiasm. And feel good about why they started their sport in the first place. So that's another factor, internal motivation, and then desire. Another one, then I think another strategy for mental toughness is being able to commit to excellence. How good do you want to be? And so asking, you know, once you have that vision or desire, then, you know, sort of obstacles are going to get in your way, and times, you know, schedules and conflicts are going to come up. And so that's where you need to, you know, have your athletes, say, maybe do a little technique for committing themselves to excellence, finding out, okay, so now you have this vision, so what's the plan? How you have to decide to make this a priority in your life, no matter what happens, I'm going to keep practicing and keep working at this. And there's going to be difficulties and disappointments. And so at some point, you need to teach your athletes to be able to keep moving forward and to keep working. Like I had an 18-year-old girl yesterday I saw who was a track runner, and she's just coming back she'd had a really difficult time with an eating disorder, and was actually in the hospital, and now is coming back and doing really well with or starting to run again. And she had her first race last week, first race on the track, and then she said she was really disappointed because she ran 10 seconds slower than last year. Well, of course, last year she was in really great shape, and that's before she had these, problems come up. And this is the first, and that was the last race of the season. She was comparing, this is her first race of this season. She's comparing to the very best she'd been before. So feeling disappointed because she's doing too much comparing. And so you want to help the athlete first be able to put the race into perspective and say, okay, what are all the factors here? And let's look at it. And there's the initial reaction. I wanted to also say something really important here about after you do a competition and there is that, there's two things that go on that I, we talked about last night in a session that I did with this athlete and her parents, that her parents were saying, no, you shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't feel disappointed. You want to feel happy after every race, the father was saying. And I was saying, well, actually, everybody has different feelings and different reactions after a race. And he was saying, the father was saying, well, I would always feel happy or I feel glad that I can just run. But that's his reaction, and he wanted his daughter to feel the same way as he would feel. And so there was this conflict there. She said, no, I was disappointed. I told the parents that it's really important to I gave them a little acronym, LISTEN, L for listen. It's really important to listen to your, and for all of you who are performing edge coaches, the same thing, and regular coaches and athletes, parents, same thing, that we need to listen and read our athletes. And let whatever reaction you have after a practice or a competition, that's, those feelings are, they're not good or they're not bad, they're just there. And you need to, it's important to listen to what the athlete says and just let them get their feelings out, because that's their initial reaction. And so you want to, because if an athlete is not allowed to express their emotion, their raw emotion, what they feel, then chances are they're going to go, it's going to go somewhere else. It's going to go into some destructive behavior. Like for her, this athlete, if she wasn't allowed to express her feelings, then she'd probably end up going and restricting food or, not eating again and getting into, eating disorder behavior. But I was helping her parents to understand that listening, that it's okay. You got to just, L for listen, and then A is for accept, just accept and acknowledge those feelings, whatever it is that's going on. And be able to just accept the feelings, even if they aren't, the father doesn't like the way that the daughter's reacting. She's disappointed and saying, well, that's, of course you're not going to run as fast. This is your first race of the season. But just accept what her feelings are. And then and be patient. P is for patience. Just be patient. And then so step one is to react, the initial reaction after a performance of some sort. And then step two is the reflection. After a little while, then you talk about it and you realize, okay, well, this is the first race of the season. Let's put performance into perspective here and realize that it's just a, that's the first race, and many factors go into a performance. What you ate the night before, your mindset, how your body's feeling, the conditions that day. There's lots of different factors. So if you talk about all those different factors and see, and the initial reaction is just kind of your raw feelings. And then if you have a chance to talk to the athlete about the big picture, all the things that go into a performance, then they realize, okay, it's not just one thing, like the athlete was thinking, oh, it's because I'm too fat. Most people that have an eating disorder or anorexia or, will go to that, like their number one mode of thinking is it's always because they're too heavy or too fat, but she's it's kind of a body distortion. But if we talked about it and how all of these different factors involved, then she was able to see that that's just one of many factors there. And in fact, it's her first race, and it's and that she just didn't wasn't used to racing yet, and didn't, and you have to get back into it and know what pace to run, and that this is really just a learning experience. So that's all about reflecting on an experience, putting performance into perspective, and then recommitting yourself to excellence and saying, okay, well, I want to get back to work. So not just sulk about it. For a lot of athletes will, you know, walk around feeling bad for a week or two, but she, what she did after that was able to, the next day, just get back to work and go do, you know, do her workouts and make, and it, when you have a disappointing race, it can, or you feel disappointed, that can make you even more determined to do well in the next one. So just say to yourself, next race, next workout. So that's a an example of how to recommit yourself to excellence. And so that's a third technique to use. Another one I wanted to talk about is how to be focused and yet also relaxed. So being able to take... you know, being able to maintain your focus for long periods of time. And I think that that is something that is a problem, a challenging. This is a something that allows you to be really mentally tough as well, to be focused in the face of distractions, decide what to tune into and what's critical to your performance, and then tune out what's not critical. Because a lot of times distractions can just really hijack what we're doing. To be able to, and you can be focused and relaxed at the same time. So a lot of people wonder how that's possible. If you're relaxed, how can you be focused? But actually, you can relax if you take a few deep breaths. What that does is it helps you to relax and to shut out what's going on, the worry about the future and the kind of ruminating about the mistakes we just made before that. And so you can tune in to just the present tense, that third P, you know, positive images, power words, and third P of present focus. You want to be able to focus on the present because that's all we have control of. So if you have an athlete that is having a difficult time with, you know, just thinking about some mistake that they just made and thinking about that over and over and thinking, God, I don't want to mess up, don't want to mess up, then it's then that's probably what's going to happen. If you repeat that over in your mind, don't mess up, you're repeating the thing that you want to avoid. So one example of that is, with a basketball player I'm working with, he gets, you know, if he makes a mistake on the court, then the coach puts him, this is an example of a team sport, and the coach will put him on the bench, you know, take him out of the game if he makes a mistake. And then he gets really frustrated and sits there and kind of thinks over and over, replays the mistake in his mind. But if the coach calls him back in to play, then he's not really mentally warmed up and, you know, tends to make is really worried, plays real timidly, doesn't play aggressively, makes another mistake, and then the coach calls him out to sit on the bench again. So what we did was, an exercise to allow him, to help him to be focused and yet relaxed while he's sitting on the bench, so getting ready to play. So in the case of team playing like this, Michelle up in, of course, in Canada that plays the hockey, same thing. Athletes are always going in and then sitting on the bench again. And it's really important to mentally still stay in the game while you are on the bench and be able to be focused and yet relaxed. So I was working with this boy on how to, while he's on the bench, to be able to just continually looking at the at what plays are going on, imagine himself out there as a player, and imagine himself throwing the ball, passing the ball back and forth, sometimes making a good decision, you know, drawing. Sometimes you want to come back, draw in the defender toward you so that he thinks you're going to shoot, but then you go ahead and pass it to the next guy, and all that stuff is, and then sometimes you shoot, and all that is going on out there on the court, and if he's watching the other players, imagining that he is that player, then still staying mentally in the game, doing that mental warm-up all the time, then the next time when the coach calls him in to the game, then he's going to be able to go ahead and be ready and jump right in and be a lot more efficient right away. He won't have to, you know, warm up his mind, because in something like basketball, a lot of sports, there's a lot of fast action, and you can't. There's no time to really warm up out there on the court. You're just running right into the game. So having those techniques to focus, that was a really tough challenge for this athlete example and something where you got to be mentally tough when you're on the bench as well as out in. That'll allow you to be even more mentally tough when you're out in the game against other athletes. So those are a couple of some techniques I wanted to share with you. I've got another one here as well, but just let me check in for a second. How does that? Does anyone have reactions or questions to those, or is that helpful? If anyone's unmuted, you can just press *6 to unmute your phone, and then feel free to check in.
Hi, John. This is no questions, just listening. It's great.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. I don't know if you've got any examples or thought of anything, examples of those areas. Okay. Go ahead.
Not coming up with anything at the moment.
Okay. So I think there's a few others on the call, too, that are muted right now, and that's okay. If you have any questions, you can always just email me too, and I'm happy to always answer your questions. So, another area to look at is a courage to succeed. You know, being able to have that courage in a difficult moment. So, a lot of times there's worry about being able to, you know, the competition is too stiff. Being able to actually do what you said you were going to do, going through with something, and this is an example of that is these same techniques apply within the air sports and also in business and in music, test taking. The great thing about this area, sports psychology and broader performance psychology, is these same techniques apply to every area of life. So you may have somebody who, say a musician, who is having a tough time with, they can practice just fine, but then when they get in front of an audience, having to do an audition, let's say, to get into, I've had a person that was trying to get into an orchestra, and they got really nervous during that time, during an audition. All of a sudden, their mind goes blank. So you need to have that courage to be able to, once you've got the desire, but also you want to have that courage to be able to practice under pressure and to continue to over-practice and be so well-prepared that even in tough situations and high-pressure situations that you can perform. And I know it takes courage to stick to your game plan and keep going toward your goal regardless of the obstacles, regardless of, let's say, that person did an audition and they got rejected, so they needed to come back and be able to do another audition for another group. It takes courage to push yourself to those places you've never been before. And sometimes you're competing. She was competing against really tough competition, physically and mentally. As an example, I'm actually a musician myself. I was a music major before I got into psychology, and recently renewed my interest in music and um, I've always just played by myself as played guitar, and but last Friday I got a chance to play in front of a group of people, and they were all it was at an open mic where you know, anyone can go up and sign up to play, but it's in front of a lot of other really good musicians. So it's not just a regular audience. These are all other people that are professional musicians. So it's people who know music. So I was really nervous, and actually, my fingers were sweating, and my finger picks actually fell off my fingers, one of my hands, because I was so nervous. I thought, God, this is something I've been doing for years, but all of a sudden, I'm really rusty and hadn't played the guitar in a long time, and I haven't played in front of an audience or a professional audience like this at all in a long time. So I was just so nervous that I got through it okay, but I wasn't as smooth as I'd like to be. So but I realized, okay, that was a training situation, and I took the courage to get up there and do it. And just, everybody's got to have a first time, right? Same thing with public speaking with all of us. If you're speaking in front of a group, you might get nervous, and so it takes that courage to be able to perform well and do your best in many situations. And sometimes you think, okay, I've got this skill down, now I can do this. But then you get into a high-pressure situation, and it's like you have to learn it all over again. So that's why it's good to take baby steps and do and practice under no pressure, and then do it under a little bit of pressure, and build up to more situations where you do that. Just like with speaking, I work, there's Toastmasters groups all over the U.S. I'm not sure if they're in Canada or other countries, probably, but they're opportunities to practice your speaking. And I was very nervous at first, and as I got, and the nervousness is always there, but after a while I was able to do better under pressure, and then got to the point where I could speak in front of audiences of 50 people and 100 people and then 1,000 people, and I've actually spoken in front of audiences of 10,000 people before, and because I'd done it many times and I knew that particular talk so well, of course I was really nervous, but I was able to maintain and just to get through it. So it's something that you have to do. Does take courage. It's like, even though you're nervous, you have to just do it or just get started. And I think just get started is even better. Saying that is better than saying just do it, because do it means do the whole thing. But if you say just get started to yourself, just do the first step, then you're going to be able to handle that. And once you do the first step, your mind can chunk that out easier, and then you can get to then you just go flow right into the second step very easily. So, one other skill I wanted to mention and technique is just that idea of that we overlook so much, and that's being organized and having that self-discipline. Once you can set a goal, or you can have a dream or a vision, but you need to, a lot of athletes maybe fall down because they don't, they're not able to, organize their workouts or maybe they get the workouts late, or they're not able to, have that good time management and maintain their consistency in their training and their competing. So that's an area where you don't have to be the smartest athlete or the most talented athlete or the strongest or the fastest. Oftentimes it's the person that is the most disciplined and the person that's able to get there and train every day and just focus on the details. That's the person who often wins and can accelerate, because they've taken the time to, you see other athletes that are really talented and just naturally can do things, but they're not, they don't have the motivation, or they don't show up for workouts, or they don't get there early. They just kind of do the minimum that they need to do, and they figure they can just kind of float by on their talents. on their gifts. But sooner or later, that can catch up to you because there's situations they're not prepared for. But it's the athlete that works hard on a daily basis, knows how to self-energize, and regardless of the obstacles outside, or regardless of fatigue or difficult circumstances, that they can, be able to stay to internally generate that energy and excitement they need to do their best. So if you can teach one technique, you can do is to just teach your athletes some, just basic, time management techniques. I think that's a good part of sports psychology coaching and performing edge coaching, really, is having your athletes stay disciplined and be able to be, write out a schedule, do their plan, do the big vision, and then write out their goals, the goal for the season, and then their short-term goals for that, weekly and monthly, daily goals, and then be able to just say, okay, today, each day, what am I going to do today, and put that schedule together, not only the training schedule, but also taking time to rest and recover. And being able to, and then say what they're going to do that week in terms of their workouts, not only the physical training, but schedule their mental training. So, if they're doing an MP3 for you, that they have them do a schedule so they listen to it every night, or maybe they've got 7 different visualizations, so they listen to one each night, and some athletes are more self-disciplined and they just do it on their own, but a lot of people need your help to, like I've had one athlete say, okay, well, which visualizations should I listen to each night? And they want more of your guidance to pick out how often to listen and what to do, and then after they listen to an MP3, what they should do with that. Journaling is really good, to take some time to journal their feelings and write that down and then discuss that. And then setting up your schedule for your actual sessions with them. That's really important to keep that consistency and let people know that it takes, a good 2 to 3 months, I think at least, to working with someone once a week to really get these skills down. So that's all part of the discipline and organization and consistency part of the skill to be able to handle difficult situations, because there's going to be tough situations that come up that require this mental toughness. And if you can teach people that mental toughness is a skill and is a muscle that needs training just like any other muscle in the body, and it requires just practice every day. It's not a huge amount of time that it takes, but just a lot of the practice is just noticing, just that awareness of what it is that noticing, being aware of their feelings, being able to handle emotions, having techniques to be able to handle those emotions when they come up. Michelle, you and I were talking earlier about the that sports really helps athletes to be able to manage emotions, and if sports brings up so many more emotions, the highs and the lows and the immediacy of that, exactly what's happening, that you can gives kids and everyone a chance to deal with emotions more quickly and on a regular basis. So you can teach them techniques how to process their emotions. And I think it's good to, do those regular sessions once a week. But then also you can, another thing you can do is have the athlete pay you for the 4, or the parent pay you for 4 sessions. And then if there's, if there's a time you need to do, say, a half an hour phone call, if something comes up, say in the middle of a competition or something major comes up, it's okay to, you know, we can do another sort of emergency phone call or tune-up phone call during the week and use the, you know, one of the sessions or half a session that they paid you for that time. So you don't do it for free, but do it out of the sort of money that if they paid you for four sessions in advance, then you can use that for any emergencies that come up too. And a lot of times there's something really heavy that just happened, or maybe an athlete got injured, or they got had a rough encounter with another athlete. Another athlete said something that was really hurtful or damaging to them. Sometimes athletes want to be able to just talk about that and process it through. And that's a great learning experience, a great time for you to be able to help them to learn and grow from that experience. So those are the things that I wanted to share with you today, the different techniques for mental toughness, internal motivation and self-direction, and then finding out what drives you, what the reasons why it's important. And then secondly, the desire, enthusiasm, looking for why having the athlete draw you a picture, what attracted them to their sport, bringing in the fun factor, and then that commitment to excellence, you know, being able to recommit when things aren't going well, and doing whatever it takes to make that commitment over and over. And then being fourth thing is being focused and yet relaxed, you know, teaching athletes to focus. And then that courage to succeed, being able to have the courage when there's when you don't do well, and building up, practicing in different pressure situations. And then, discipline and being able to, you know, bring in that organization factor so that athletes are, your athletes practice really well and maintain, you know that mental toughness is something that requires daily practice. And it's an opportunity to work that mental toughness muscle in all different different situations. So that's the training for today. And just wanted to check in with you. Our next call will be April the 23rd at Thursday, and just check in if there's any questions or what was most helpful for you today. If anyone wants to check in.
Hi, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah. Hi, Michelle. Yeah, was there something that was most helpful for you? Or any questions?
Yeah, how you described courage under the techniques and to overcome obstacles and difficulties, and it's just you're very good at reframing things into the positive, and courage is something you just want to, it's an inspiring word just in itself.
Can you say that again? It's a little hard to hear, or your phone's breaking up.
When you're dealing with lead who is facing these challenges, and I love the word of courage when you're facing a difficult or challenging time with your sport. And it's easy to get into that negative, cynical headspace, but you approach it from a point of being courageous to step up to this and overcome this obstacle. It's a very positive reframe. So I found that really good.
Oh, great! Yeah. Perspective. The mind goes to those negative places, and it's just that's a human. Because we're human, it happens that we have all that negative chatter. But if we can then notice it early on and more often, and have techniques to be able to go to the positive side and say, "Hey, okay, it takes courage to be able to get through this. Yeah, how can I get through this and keep moving forward?" See the big picture, not just this tiny little kind of. We tend to get into it when we're negative, get into that tunnel vision of, it's just me, that pity party, we call it, just me, poor me, and this tough situation. But if you can see the big picture and say it's many factors, and sometimes, if it's something that happened between another person, you can say the big picture can be they're probably going through something, or that's just their style, and not take it personally, and have the courage to see the big picture that, I'm going to work on what I can control, and just get to work and not worry about the things I can't control. I can't control other people or other situations. There's so much we can do ourselves, and that's what courage is all about, too. So, thanks for your feedback on that, Michelle, and thanks so much for everyone for the call today. And congratulations, Michelle, on getting your article published and the great clients you're getting. And I wanted to announce Annie and Fernando in Mexico. They just got their certification. I completed the program here. So they are in Mexico. They haven't been able to get on the calls sometimes because of internet reception, but hopefully they can join us for one of these calls here, too. And they're the ones that Annie and Fernando became the mental training coaches for the Central American Games, which is like the Pan Am, is right before the Pan Am Games, working with equestrian athletes, and their athletes from Mexico got the gold medal individual and the gold medal for the team and a bronze medal individual as well. So it's amazing results there, working with their Central American team. Now they're going into the Pan Am Games as well. So it'll be very exciting to follow what they're doing too, and have them be part of our ongoing mentoring and certification program here. So thanks, everyone. Thanks, all. And we'll talk to you next time on April the 23rd, on Thursday. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye now.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Okay. Bye, Michelle. Bye, all.
Take care.
Take care.